Steve from Kingston's phoned in. Now, Steve, you were there on that fateful day. And the interesting thing is you're ringing in to say that the ordinary copper on the ground was doing his best, more or less.
Well, that's definitely the case, yeah. The rank and file, I think, you know, there was fear in their eyes, and they, you know, they realised. I think the guys who were told to sort of man barricades and, you know, make sure that the, you know, the emergency services didn't come on, etc. For what we saw, you know, they were being told to do that, and you know, as anybody would under instructions.
Whereabouts on the day were you, Steve, in the stadium?
Oh, I was in Levin's Lane. I was in the upper, which was, you know, thankfully, we'd gone the year before, you see. We played Forest in the semis at the same ground in exactly the same position the year before. And we'd got tickets down below, and it was a mad crush there and then. And even though, you know, sort of I was only mid-20s, you didn't fancy doing that again. So we got tickets for above, which is kind of worse in a way because we were looking down on it, you know.
Were you ever at any stage frightened for yourself?
No, not for myself, James, no. Frightened for everybody who was down below, that was for sure.
And did you realise when you were looking down onto this scene, Steve, exactly what was going on?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm afraid you would. Yeah, you could see it. And it was certainly after kickoff anyway. Before kickoff, there's always, at the time anyway, there was always pushing and shoving. And that was what people loved. It was the atmosphere. And but after kickoff, you know, you saw it was getting, the side pens were still very much empty. And it was, I know now, obviously, that the gates had been opened. But you've seen, like, sort of normally at the 5 minutes beforehand, you know, there's normally the last people getting in, and generally there's normally a bit of a push and a shove. But this particular time, on this one, you know, it was clear that there was a lot of people coming in just before kickoff.
And do you think it was, I mean, I'm not trying to look for any, there are no excuses for what was done afterwards in the way the evidence was obscured, altered and changed. But at the time when all this was happening, there must have been panic, and probably panic by those people who were trying to control the situation. Did you see any of that?
Well, you couldn't see that there was panic from there, guys. But the police who were on the pitch that were trying to stop people getting over the fence, you know, you could see that there was, I wouldn't say the word panic, I think there was intrepidation, there was fear, really. I think I saw, and I believe, and my mates who went with us and the people by us, we could see, because you're in a good vantage point in the Leppin Lane upper, you could see that these guys were rapidly losing control. It wasn't a normal situation. And I appreciate in those days, you know, I was at Heysen as well. So, you know, I appreciate that there was bad in each section of fans. And we had the same in ours. You know, nobody ever painted Liverpool fans out to be whiter than white. But at the end of the day, I think the police who were at the front line there under instruction from the superiors were let down on that day.
How long did it seem to take before the police on the pitch realised that those people trapped were trying to get out, trying to fight for their lives rather than trying to invade the pitch?
When the Liverpool fans took over, really, the lads who were in the ground who actually, you know, took over and started helping people get on the pitch. It was almost like, look, lads, we'll deal with this type of thing because the police who were on the front line really, you know, they were overwhelmed.
Looking back now, with the benefit of hindsight, do you think there is anything that would have helped alleviate that situation at the time?
Yeah, put the kickoff back.
They should have done that.
Definitely, 1,000%. I mean, I'm not saying that would have been any better, but, you know, had those gates have not been open, had they have not taken that decision outside to open those gates, and let people in without having shown their tickets, and nobody can ever say that there was people there without tickets, because that can never be proven. But all I can say, if they hadn't have opened those gates and let the people in just to make sure that the game kicked off at 3 o'clock, then that wouldn't have happened, and I think everybody would agree with that.
Now we come full circle to this particular time. What do you think should be done? What should those people who obviously lied about the consequences, what should they have done?
What should they have done?
Well, what should they do now, yeah. Obviously, Steve, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I think we're quite united. Any football fan, it could have been any team at that particular time, and I think everybody's united in the fact that, you know, accountability. Just stand up and say, you know what, we cocked up here for whatever reason. I mean, I'm not going into where our feelings are about Mrs. Thatcher and her government at the time, who, you know, was even brought out a couple of weeks ago, where you know, there were sad things upset about that. And the same with your mate, Mr. Johnson. You know, there's no reason for those guys now to not turn around and say, which in fairness, and Cameron, I think, you know, would never be held in high esteem in Liverpool. But when he did come up and say that in the Commons yesterday, he was applauded by all sections from our side of the defence, and also, I think, from the victim side, particularly the victims, you know. But I think that those guys need to be standing, and it's, you know, Duffield and people who were under his command directly and who made those emergency services personnel change their statements. I'm afraid, you know, had we have done that, you and I, James, you know, we would have been facing, you know.
Tell me what you feel about Sir Norman Bettison, who, of course, is the Chief Constable now of West Yorkshire. I don't know whether you heard me before say. He has said, and he hasn't withdrawn this yet, he says, and at the time he was an off-duty Yorkshire police inspector who attended the game, he said the fans' behaviour, to the extent that it was relevant at all, made the job of the police in the crush outside Leppings Lane turnstiles harder than it needed to be.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, you know, you say to coal miners or steel workers or something like that, you know, you say, you know what, today, lads, we've got a job that's just a little bit harder than normal, let's get on with it. And they do. You know, a trained police officer in that situation, whether it be a football match, rugby match, or anything like that. You know, those guys who served on that at the Leppings Lane at that time. You know, you could see, you know, ramming us with horses and herding us into small sections to try and line us up, etc. When in reality, you know, that the area around Leppings Lane, by Sheffield Wednesday Football Club's own admission, was woefully inadequate. I think Bettison, he was a bad lad when he was at Liverpool as the chief constable. You know, he made some mad decisions, and you're lucky really, because Mr. Hogan, how he was at London and Metropolitan now, you know, righted a lot of his wrongs. But no, but he's talking. I'm afraid I don't agree with what he said.
It must be difficult for you after all these years having to rethink through it. I mean, how long did it take you after all this happened, Steve, to manage to get back to some kind of normal life, or even go to a football game again?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, I went the next one, you know, Celtic Football Club, who arranged, that was the first match back, and we went up to, they arranged a friendly with us, and the fans went, you know, the lucky ones who survived went up, you know, For the people who didn't make it, you know, you felt like you had to go back there because you knew that they'd have done it for you. And not saying that you'll never get over the change. And the flashbacks are quite difficult and harsh. But I still go to match now, and there's still no question that I'll continue to do so. And I'm going to a game now, which is incredibly safe and well managed in the main. And you know, that the lessons there, I think, for the people who haven't made it. You know, we have to stick, still go to the game, which we love. But at the same time, the woeful thing is that it just should not have happened. And unfortunately, you know, the fact is we have to live with it and get on with it. And unlike, again, I've got to mention old Floppy here, you know, we're not wallowing in our grief. You know, we're not, people aren't looking for sympathy, etc. They wanted justice. They wanted the truth to come out, unlike Mr. McKenzie. Now they've got it. You know, the sense of relief back home last night was phenomenal. It seemed like a big weight had been taken off the shoulders.
Stevie, I want to thank you very much indeed for sharing that with us, because it must be difficult. And I also want to thank you as well. I haven't heard anybody say anything about those coppers who were there and must have been very scared, of course, at a particular time. A lot of them very young lads too, who will perhaps have been concerned about how people thought. Not their fault, as you quite rightly say.
Right, absolutely, and I'm glad that point's made. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. I think that's what the rank and file officer needs. He needs to know that the blame is not portioned on them individually. You know, they were let down badly by their superiors, and they're the guys who should have to face the consequences, I'm afraid.
Steve, thank you very much indeed. Fascinating talking with you. Thanks a lot. You're listening to LBC 97.3.